Moncrief on News Talk.
Time to look at stories from other parts of the world that don't normally make the front pages here. Jonathan De Burka Butler is here to bring them to us once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
John, how are you getting on?
Australia we're going to first. And this is to do with the Christian Brothers and compensation payments in terms of child abuse.
Yep, it's Christian Brothers, which of course was founded in Ireland. And they have been running schools and orphanages in Australia and New Zealand since the 1850s, would you believe? So they've been there a long time. Investigation, as has happened in many parts of the world, the same is true in Australia, investigations found that they were the scenes of widespread child sexual abuse since the 1950s, right? And obviously people have brought cases of alleged abuse against them, and there's applications in for redress and all that kind of thing, right? So what has happened is that it appears that the amount of money that they owe or potentially owe in the redress scheme is much more than the money that they have, all right? So they're looking at paying out about, I'll go in Australian dollars and I'll stick to that. So Australian dollars, 774 million Australian dollars is what they expect to pay out, okay? But they own 23 million in cash and about $216 million in property holdings, right? So they've only, not even half of what they would need to pay out at the moment, right? So they went to court. I think it went to the New South Wales Supreme Court, and they basically said, look, we're broke, so can we have a pause on the payouts at the moment? Because what we want to do is we want to sell all the properties that we have, and we're going to throw it into a scheme, and we'll come up with a new idea, a separate scheme that makes sure everybody will be paid. It might not be as much as what we're due to pay out, but it's the best we can do because we're broke. And the court has found in their favour and said, yes, you can have a moratorium on it until September, and we'll come back. And so what the idea, the court's idea here is to allow victims to come forward and sort of say, okay, well, if this is the best we can do, then we'll go with that and we'll take that offer. Now, I don't know, you know, the groups and how they're being represented. I mean, there's all sorts of cases going on. There's 32 cases of alleged abuse due for trial. There's 540 applications before the National Redress Scheme at the moment to help survivors of the past abuse. And then there's another interesting element in this hearing, which is that the Australian government sort of weighed in and they said, well, look, there was another body that you set up a couple of years ago back in 2007 called the Edmund Rice Education Australia. And an awful lot of the schools, which are obviously properties and have properties and other properties, were moved into that organisation, right? So some of them moved into that organisation for $1, right?
Now, this thing
was established back in 2007, so it predates the Royal Commission by 6 years, right? So there was a Royal Commission in 2013 looking into the abuse scandal. So it predates that. And they reckon that the assets are worth at the moment up to $2
billion. Oh.
That the Edmund Rice Education Australia, that this institution has. So the Australian government are kind of going, well, you know, you're saying you're broke, but you did get rid of quite a bit of property and it's moved into another entity, which is worth $2 billion. And that would more than cover what you owe.
Right. But that would involve selling off schools, though.
That would involve selling off schools, which is obviously...
Which are functioning schools,
I absolutely. Yeah. Most of them are. Now, there are, it should be said, there are other properties in there. There are some, you know, private homes in Sydney, for example, which worth a couple of million quid, are in that portfolio as well. So that needs to be sifted through. But all of this, of course, brings delays and that kind of thing. So, it remains to be seen what happens.
And in September, will they look through this portfolio of properties?
I don't know whether they'll look into that. I believe that the new plan will actually allow creditors to pursue the assets that have been sent to this new, relatively new institution, the Edmund Rice Education Australia. But again, that's going to take a long time, and
I assume it would be more court cases to prove,
and all that kind of thing. So, anyway.
Right, Thailand we're going to go to next. I suppose this is a story involving Buddhist monks. Were killed by an 11-year-old.
Were killed by an 11-year-old. It's a tragic story, and some of the footage from this is absolutely horrendous, it should be said. Now, it happened in the northeast of the country in a province called Mukdahan. And these Buddhist monks were going along in a procession. They were walking along the road, very busy road, at least two lanes on either side, four lanes in total. And they were hit by a car, a pickup truck specifically, at a really, really unbelievable speed. Now, there was about 40 people in the group altogether. So it appears that the first nine monks were hit. Five of them died at the scene and four others died later in hospital. The others managed to get out of the way quickly enough. But it seems that this was a pickup truck that was stolen or taken by an 11-year-old boy. It was his parents. He was home alone from school. Apparently he was sick. He took the car without their knowledge. They were out working. When they discovered that the car was gone, they reported it to police. But in the meantime, or shortly thereafter, the child had taken the car and had lost control of it and had driven it into these unfortunate monks, nine of who, as I said, died. There's a lot more injured still. But yeah, quite a scary story.
Yeah, and it's quite in Thailand. It's quite common. There's processions in the street.
Yeah, yeah, thing. Yeah. They were on a they were going on a pilgrimage apparently, and you know, they walk in a line. They were walking pretty tight in on the road, going the right direction. You know, facing the traffic and all that. And unfortunately, this young boy lost control of the car, which he shouldn't have taken in the first place.
Yes,
obviously.
Of course. But he was only 11. But there's no hint, or is there any hint of the parents being prosecuted? My parents didn't contact the authorities as soon as they realised it.
They did. Yeah, they did contact them as soon as they realised the thing was, or the car was gone, or the pickup truck was gone. The only thing we know about the 11-year-old, at this stage we don't know what the police are going to do with the 11-year-old. The only thing we know about him, the only details that he have been released, is that he has special needs of some sort.
Oh, God.
So we'll have to see how it pans out. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, Sri Lanka, we're going to go to now, where there have been prison riots, 26 people dead as a result of that.
Yeah, this is a story from a town called Negombo, about 200,000 people. It's about 30 kilometres north of the capital, Colombo, there. And Sri Lanka's having a bit of a tough time at the moment. They had an economic crash back in 2022, change of government there. So this is seen as kind of a symptom of their woes, I suppose, or another example of their woes. The riots started on Sunday. Apparently, there was an argument between two rival gangs who were in the prison. Apparently, there was drug dealing going on inside the prison, and an inmate ratted out the other side, and they began to have a fight. The fight got really quite large, and guards started getting involved and trying to control the situation. Now, in the end, 27 people have now died. Seven of those were guards, and the riots went on for 2 days. It was so frightening that some of the inmates from the women's prison actually climbed up onto the roof and begged to be evacuated. And that roof actually collapsed. So some of them were injured in that, as you can imagine. So it was all pretty out of control. Now, things did calm down by Monday evening, but at that stage there was a lot of victims and over 100 people were injured. So bad. Sorry state of affairs there.
Yeah, and prisons there are pretty overcrowded?
Yeah, it's desperate. So on the Sunday that this riot happened, there were 41,250 inmates in prisons in Sri Lanka. It has a capacity of 11,000, all of the prisons. So you're talking about people sleeping on a rota, each prisoner having about 1 meter to themselves. So a lot of tension, as you can imagine. And then somebody goes and, you know, sort of rats out and drug deals that are going on in the prison. And you can imagine that it makes people unhappy.
And has this kind of thing happened before in Sri Lanka?
It has, prisons? Yes, yeah. It has. There was a riot back in 2020, as far as I remember. And in that case, they actually had to give an amnesty to about 700 prisoners to try and, you know, relieve the situation. I think there was a couple of dozen people who died in that prison riot back in 2020. But they've had a tough time, as I said. And so, you know, with the economic collapse, people are obviously in poverty. So crime levels have risen somewhat. So hence the rise in prison populations as well.
Right. Ethiopia we're going to go to. Now, you don't really hear so much about rabies anymore, but this seems to have been a massive outbreak of it.
Yes, there was. There was an outbreak of rabies in a town called Hosana. It's in the middle of the country. It's not huge. A population, again, of about 180,000 people. So it's big enough for there to be a problem, if you know what I mean. And the reaction, well, what happened in the first place was that three children died from dog bites and 80 other people have been hospitalised, according to the local mayor, okay? And this was, the dog bites resulted in rabies, okay? Mm. Now, to be honest with you, those 80, I would expect more deaths because apparently when rabies gets into you,
it's highly contagious.
It's very difficult to treat, even when the symptoms start presenting themselves, even at an early stage. So there might well be more deaths. So it appears what happens here is that, they're calling them community groups in the various articles that I've seen, but I'm going to go out on a whim here and call them vigilantes. Started going from door to door and telling people that they needed to kill their dogs. Or that they would be sent to prison or that they would be fined. Now, I don't know where these people got their authority from. The mayor, when these stories started getting out, came out straight away and basically said, look, these community groups, although they're affiliated to us, the town hall effectively, they're nothing. We didn't give them any authority to do this.
Okay.
And the killing of dogs is illegal. Okay. But in the end, it's been estimated that between 400 and 450 dogs were killed in this town. So they were basically going,
wow,
we don't care whether your dog has been vaccinated against rabies or hasn't been vaccinated against rabies. We need you to get rid of your dogs. And they would either take them and kill them themselves, or they would let the owners do it, which was obviously very sad.
Okay, and maybe some owners just did it themselves on their own volition, really, given what was going on.
Yeah.
So has it stopped now, the dog killing, or the rabies?
The dog killing has stopped. I don't know about the rabies, to tell you the truth. I mean, the problem that you have with rabies there, apparently there's about 10,000 dogs there, 7,000 of them are vaccinated against rabies. So it means you've 3,000, that are at risk of getting it. So the dog killings have stopped. According to the mayor, again, Samuel Shigute, he said that this dog killing stopped within a day. There are other reports saying that these community groups / vigilantes are still going around to houses and, you know, telling people to kill their dogs. But for now, the mass killings have stopped. At least it was so gruesome that the BBC said that they couldn't publish the photos that they had seen.
Right, China, we're going to finally, I suppose this is a good news story.
Yes,
and to do with
because they've all been pretty grim so far.
Yes,
I must apologise.
So this is a successful sexual harassment case, which doesn't happen that often in China.
No, it doesn't. This was a woman, we only know her by her nickname, which she asked to use to protect her identity. Jiang is her name. Young lady who was studying in 2022 and went off to do an internship at what is called the Beijing Grassland Alliance, right? So it's an environmental NGO. And she was working there, and one of her bosses, who was 10 years her senior, took a bit of a fancy to her and basically started harassing her, right? She started joking about her bra size, holding her hand, and he was sending, sexually suggestive WeChat messages to her and the like, okay? Now, initially, when she spoke to her colleagues about this, they kind of brushed it off and said, oh, you know, office banter or whatever you want, okay? But then she looked into it a little bit further. But what's interesting about this is who she discussed it with, okay? And it was with an AI chatbot called DeepSeek. And so she started having these conversations with DeepSeek, sort of saying, is this normal behavior? And DeepSeek said, no. And on that basis, when she left in 2024, she sued the manager the following year, so in 2025, and a decision was made in January of this year in her favour, right? So she was awarded emotional damages of 5,000 yuan, which is about 645 euros, and he had to make an apology. So, you know, this is not something, as you mentioned at the top of this item, this is not something that happens very often. In fact, sexual harassment, you've only been able to sue for sexual harassment since 2021, would you believe? So it is a new frontier, I suppose, in Chinese society.
Yeah, but that was a civil case she took, though. It wasn't a simple matter of reporting it to the police and they would have acted.
Good point. Yeah. It seems to be a civil case that she took. Yeah. So I wonder, they didn't act at all. Yeah, good point.
Things like the Me Too movement and those kind of societal pressure groups, did they penetrate much into China at the time?
They did. They did at the time. But what seems to have happened is that it was censored. I think there was the authorities were kind of spooked that it might turn into something bigger than just a Me Too movement. And they're quite wary of these things, as you know, in China. But there was a couple of notable cases. There was a case in 2018 where a former intern at a state broadcaster brought a high-profile TV producer to court. Now, that was thrown out due to lack of evidence, apparently, but she kind of became the face. I think Zhu was her name. She kind of became the face of the Me Too movement in China. And I think the presenter in question actually countersued, and then he dropped the charges. And then there was a famous case of a professional tennis player a few years later who accused the former vice premier of sexual harassment or forcing her to have sex. And she disappeared, if you remember, and then reappeared to say, oh, it's all been a big misunderstanding. So an awful lot of these things are censored and stopped. So this case, you can understand why this woman wants to protect her identity for fear of a backlash.
Absolutely. So what should we look out for over the next week?
Yeah, there's a few things coming up. Today is the 21st anniversary of the bombings in London, actually. It just came into my head, 7-7. Yeah, because I was there.
That's true,
in London on the day, so that just popped into my head. Anyway, tomorrow, the Turkey-hosted NATO summit ends in Ankara. So interesting to see what comes out of that. Then Thursday, Palm Beach International Airport is going to be named or renamed President Donald J. Trump International Airport for some reason.
A happy day.
Yeah, there we go. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we'll be looking forward to the sunshine and the Wimbledon finals.
Nice few strawberries. Jonathan, thanks a million. Thanks, as ever, Jonathan DeBurka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.